The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Okay. We're ready to roll?
Yes.
Stay with me. Stay with me, sister.
Good morning. Good morning and happy Cream Donut Day. I want to say good morning to everyone in the sanctuary and everyone over there on Zoom from Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are a Unitarian Universalist congregation dedicated to challenging the mind, nurturing the spirit, and transforming the world. We are a place to grow where everyone belongs. I'm Joanne Walker, and I'm the vice president of our congregation. And I want to personally welcome you this morning. Wherever you are on your life journey, wherever you are on your spiritual journey, whomever you love, whatever you your gender identity or expression, we welcome you into our circle of compassion and caring. Today's service is about the U.S. Constitution. This Wednesday, it will be 238 years old. I have to say that this was an extremely difficult service to prepare. I've basically lost count of how many times I started, and then something else happened out in the world, and I had to change my whole direction. There is so much chaos around us that we really don't have a lot of time to think. So now there isn't any more time for changes, so we're going to keep moving. We gather today as a community of hope and conscience, not only to honor the Constitution, but to defend it. Its promises of liberty, justice, and democracy are under attack, and its future, our future, depends on us. I hope that this hour together reminds us that democracy is not guaranteed. It is sustained by the courage and action of the people. Now, Rob Keeley is going to do our chalice lighting.
All right, I obviously already lit it, so I'm a little bit ahead of the game here, but we light this chalice honoring the vision of the Constitution that begins with "We the People." It reminds us that democracy is not finished. It's a living covenant. Entrusted to each generation as this flame burns, may we kindle our own commitment to justice, equity, and freedom, and to the work of shaping a nation that truly includes us all.
Now you do that.
All right. Now we'll light the peace lamp. And
you say,
may peace be with us.
And with all the people of the world.
Our gathering hymn is "Building a New Way," written by Martha Sandifer, arranged by Barry Hall and Bob Nicolay, and performed by the Unitarian Universal Society of Grafton and Upton Virtual Choir.
We are building a new
with love that is the seed. We can
Rob Killey and Gail Sayer are. I would like to thank the music director at Mainline for sending me the link. I heard them play it and I liked that version. It was lively. So anyway, we're going to get started with some selected thoughts on the U.S. Constitution, and Gail and Rob are going to read those for us.
Can you hear me? Today we turn to the words of those who helped shape, interpret, and challenge the United States Constitution. These quotes remind us that this document is not only a foundation of law, but also a living promise, one that requires care, courage, and commitment from each generation.
The Constitution is the guide which I will never abandon. That's attributed to George Washington.
The powers delegated by the Constitution to the federal government are few and defined, attributed to James Madison.
Democracy is a government of the people, by the people, for the people. Who said that? Abraham Lincoln, of course.
The American Constitution is, so far as I can see, the most wonderful work ever struck off at a given time by the brain and purpose of man. Attributed to W.E. Gladstone.
The true view of the executive function is, as I conceive it, that the president can exercise no power which cannot be fairly and reasonably traced to some specific grant of power or justly implied and included within such express grant as proper and necessary to its exercise. Such specific grant must either be in the federal constitution or in an act of Congress passed in pursuance thereof. William Howard Taft.
The provisions of the Constitution are not mathematical formulas, but are organic, living institutions, attributed to Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr.
The United States Constitution has proved itself the most marvelously elastic compilation of rules of government ever written to date, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
I hold that governments are meant to be and must remain the servants of the citizens, that states and federations only come into existence and can only be justified by preserving the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in the homes and families of individuals. Attributed to Prime Minister Winston Churchill.
Okay. May these words remind us that the Constitution is more than history. It's a living trust placed in our hands to guard, to challenge, and to carry forward with integrity. And may we remember the very basic view of Walter Winchell. Too many people expect wonders from democracy when the most wonderful thing of all is just having it.
So now we're going to have a very short clip from a movie called With Honor. It's pretty old, it's 1994, but this clip, I really liked it and I think it's worth watching right now.
Oh, me?
Yes, do you have an opinion on this?
No.
Are you a student in this class?
No.
Are you a guest?
No, I'm a bum.
There are no bums. There are only the financially challenged.
No, I'm a bum. But bear in mind, I'm a Harvard bum.
You must be the logical result of an open admissions policy.
No, sir. My presence here is the logical result of the search for edible garbage.
You're here for the garbage.
That's right. Colleges produce a lot of garbage. And Harvard produces more than most.
What wit. Inspired, no doubt, by Wild Turkey. You ask for charity, pleading that society has failed you and you need help. But actually, you're quite capable, and what you really want is alcoholic bliss.
I would rather drink rubbing alcohol than listen to you, if that's what you mean.
And according to the 21st Amendment, you can drink anything you want.
Simon.
Which door do I leave from?
At Harvard, we don't end our sentences with prepositions.
Well, in that case, which door do I leave from, asshole?
What democratic eloquence.
You asked the question, sir. Let me answer it. The genius of the Constitution is that it can always be changed. The genius of the Constitution is that it makes no permanent rule other than its faith in the wisdom of ordinary people to govern themselves.
Faith in the wisdom of the people is exactly what makes the Constitution incomplete and crude.
Crude? No, sir. Our founding parents were pompous, middle-aged white farmers, but they were also great men, because they knew one thing that all great men should know, that they didn't know everything. They knew they were going to make mistakes, but they made sure to leave a way to correct them. They didn't think of themselves as leaders. They wanted a government of citizens, not royalty. A government of listeners, not lecturers. A government that could change, not stand still. The president isn't an elected king, no matter how many bombs he can drop, because the crude Constitution doesn't trust him. He's a servant of the people. He's a bum, okay, Mr. Pitcannon? He's just a bum. And the only bliss that he's searching for is freedom and justice.
And I don't know if you recognized that Joe Pesci and Brendan Fraser and Gore Vidal was the teacher. And it's a panned movie. People didn't like it. I did. So I don't even know if it's available anymore. So the Constitution and its birth, its growth over time, how it's been used and interpreted, all of this stuff fascinates me. So in 3 days, this amazing document, respected around the world, will be 238 years old. As he said, it's not perfect. It was born in compromise, and it's scarred with the injustices of its time. Yet it carries within it a radical promise that we the people might govern ourselves, limit the reach of power, and protect the dignity of each person. For nearly those 2.5 centuries, this document has been the framework through which struggles for justice have been waged: abolition, women's suffrage, civil rights, marriage equality. It has been stretched, tested, amended, and sometimes betrayed. But it's endured. Remember, we had a service a while back on the rule of law. Without rules, all there is chaos. In discipline, there is freedom. We need the laws. We need guardrails to maintain order in the country. We can't really rely on the kindness of our fellow citizens all the time. I mean, look how many people fly through yellow and red lights right now. After the Revolutionary War, the former colonies were on their own. They needed to figure out how to govern. The one thing all the states had in common was that they did not want to be under the rule of a king. At first, we had Articles of Confederation, but they didn't really work. So representatives of all 13 states came to Philadelphia to design a new government. And once it was done, the intent of that document was clear. We, the people, were forming this new government and setting what authority it would have. And what did we, the people, want? They wanted justice, peace, a way to protect the country, and liberty, all with a focus on the general welfare, the well-being of all. What was different about this Constitution? Most importantly, it does put power in the hands of the people. I know that back then many people were kept from power, Black people, women, Indigenous people, the poor, but at its heart, the Constitution was a radical rethinking of what should constitute good governance. No kings, no emperors, no czars, no dictators. The people would have control. At least that was the idea. Of course, it's had a few adjustments over the years, 27 to be exact, and I think it probably needs a few more. From the Bill of Rights, which are the first 10 amendments, which established the rights of Americans and therefore set the limits of government, to the Civil War amendments providing due process and equal protection, to the 19th Amendment granting women the right to vote, the Constitution always has been a work in progress, and it should be. After all, it was drafted by a bunch of men who have been dead for over 200 years and wouldn't even recognize the world we now live in. But they looked to the future, and they built a framework that provided three branches of government, the separation of powers, checks and balances. The intent was to ensure that no one branch exercised all of the power. The first nine amendments, I lost my spot. The first nine amendments in the Bill of Rights clearly set forth what rights the people had. And the 10th Amendment, which people tend to forget about, clearly provided that any powers not given to the federal government by the Constitution, nor withheld from the states, are reserved to the states or to the people. So if it's not spelled out, it's ours. This relatively short document ensures the balance of power in the United States federal system by clarifying that states and the people retain power not explicitly granted to the national government. It was intended to be both enduring and malleable. But now, in 2025, that endurance is being tested once again, and in a way that is fueled by racism, elitism, injustice, and total disrespect and disregard of the Constitution and the rule of law. These dangers are not abstract. They are immediate. They are real, and they are human. It feels like the progress we've made is being yanked right out from under us. We're in a culture war where a politicized extremist movement has grown and declared that the United States must return to its so-called godly Christian roots, which never really existed in the first place. Most, if not all, of the colonists left their homelands in search of religious freedom. But this extremist movement has deified a man who has no interest in their so-called religious goal, who is, to say the very least, only interested in three things: power, money, and praise. Now, speaking from the heart, we see an increase in political violence. We did see it this week. We saw it a couple months ago in Minnesota. We're seeing increases in hatred and anger in the people we're walking around with. We see concentration camps coming into our country. We have a Congress that can't reach a compromise on anything. And we have an executive branch that is gaining and consolidating more power by the day, and that demands government employees swear loyalty to the president, not to the Constitution. And disappointingly most to me is we have a Supreme Court like no other, one that ignores the rule of law. It's abandoned the concepts of stare decisis and precedent, and it makes decisions based upon personal opinion or religious tenets rather than the rule of law. And we have a Chief Justice who just this past week, all on his own, declared that the executive branch could completely ignore the laws passed by Congress and continue to freeze billions of dollars in foreign aid that Congress had already marked to go out. The very foundations of everything that this country is are dangerously at risk when the Supreme Court cedes its job to interpret the Constitution and to hold both Congress and the executive in check. We're also seeing assaults on voting rights, efforts to make it harder for some voices to be heard, especially voices of the young, the poor, and people of color. The Constitution promises equal protection, yet we watch as gerrymandering and voter suppression erode the very heart of our democracy. We see the separation of power strained almost to the limit. The framers built that system of checks and balances, again, to ensure that no one branch could dominate the other. Yet this partisanship has hardened into a kind of trench warfare where loyalty to party outweighs loyalty to country. When courts, legislatures, and executives are bent toward partisan ends, the guardrails weaken. We see freedom of the press and freedom of speech threatened by disinformation, harassment, and the flood of lies spread at the speed of a click. We see media bowing to the will of a president and essentially paying him off to avoid his wrath. The First Amendment protects us from government censorship, but it can't by itself guarantee that truth will prevail over falsehood. And it can't guarantee that the media won't censor itself. It's our responsibility not to just hold government accountable, but to hold the press accountable. And we see perhaps most dangerously a growing cynicism, the belief that the Constitution no longer matters, that democracy is broken beyond repair, and that our voices make no difference. That cynicism is corrosive, because democracy dies not only through coups and decrees, but through apathy and despair. So what do we do as Universalists during this time? First, we remember that democracy is not self-sustaining. It requires cultivation, kind of like a garden. The Constitution isn't fixed and permanent, as we just heard, and contrary to what the so-called originalists say, it is a living document that needs constant care and attention. Second, we recommit ourselves to truth-telling. Our faith affirms the free and responsible search for truth and meaning. In a time of disinformation, truth itself is an act of resistance. To share truth patiently, compassionately, persistently, is to shore up the foundations of liberty. Third, we act. Unitarian Universalism calls us to work for justice, equity, and compassion. That means, for one thing, voting. It means helping others to vote. It means showing up at school board meetings, writing letters, marching, organizing, refusing to be silent when silence means complicity. And it means not giving into fear, cynicism, and complacency. We need a call to arms, not to violence, but to courage, solidarity, and action. And as many of you are already doing, we have to start locally and at the state level. Remember, we've already seen states redrawing those congressional districts with the intent to effectively fix the midterm elections. They want to gain more power in the House of Representatives. Having more control in the state government helps us avoid those things in our state. What can you do to resist and be heard? Again, act locally. Get involved. That election is how many days? Yeah, it's pretty close. November 4th, I think. Don't share anything without verifying its source. Be sure before you post it. Teach critical thinking to your family members, your friends, even if to your neighbors if you can. Do what you can to protect our elections. Democracy only works if the machinery of voting is trusted and defended. Work at the polls. Be a poll watcher. I did that last presidential election. It was a really interesting thing to watch. Advocate for the return of civics education in our schools. Don't give in to fear. This is how they thrive. They thrive on fear. It's like food. Watch their tactics. Are they showing up at your school board meetings? Have they gone after local librarians? Pay attention and meet their tactics with noise, not violence. Basically, be a real pain in the butt. Build and join coalitions. Not everyone has to march. Some can't. I can't march. But there are plenty of opportunities to resist, to defend our Constitution. Seek them out. And there are also plenty of nonpartisan ways to do that. To paraphrase Peter Finch's character in Network, be mad as hell and let them know you won't take it anymore. And finally, we need to have hope, not a naive hope that everything will be fine, but a fierce, stubborn hope grounded in our history. Our nation has faced grave dangers before. Each time, people of courage and conscience rose up to demand better. Constitution is not a relic to be admired in a glass case. It is a covenant, fragile yet resilient, entrusted to our care. We are its guardians, not the courts, not the politicians, but us, we the people. We must not yield to fear or cynicism. Democracy, quite frankly, it's not a gift from the past. It is a responsibility in the present and a promise to the future. Yeah, I've got to find where I'm at. Sorry. We're going to have a very brief musical meditation, Fanfare for the Common Man, not your usual meditation music. It's composed by Aaron Copland and performed by the Gewandhaus Orchestra.
Thank you.
I've liked it since I was five, and Aaron Copland, I think, is one of the greatest American composers. Now, Alex Dooley is going to come up here and speak with us about Matters of the Heart.
That was really cool. I like that. Good morning, everyone. I'm Alex Dooley. I'm here on behalf of the CARE team for our weekly Matters of the Heart. Before we get started, I would like to make a little announcement that the CARE team is looking for some more members. So if anyone is interested in becoming part of the CARE team, it's not a huge obligation and we're just open. So if anyone's interested, feel free. We also only have Reverend Andrew on as the only male. So if any males want to give some caring to the congregation, we would love that. And you can let me know or email Andrew or any member of the CARE team if you're interested. But for now, we'll just do our weekly Matters of the Heart. So every Sunday, we set aside this time for a special ritual, an action that speaks to a larger truth. The truth is that you are important, that your life matters, and that this community cares about you. Yes, even you who don't know anyone here. That is the deeper truth which we witness by inviting anyone who has a heavy heart or joy to share today. It's a time to share something personal from your soul, that your joys might be heightened or your sorrows might be lessened. Please keep sharing brief, share your name in the beginning, and if you are online, you can raise your physical or virtual hand and we will get to hear from you. Thank you.
So we will bring this time of sharing to a close. We are going to sing Spirit of Life. This will be, the lyrics will show up on screen, and this will be presented by our very own Christine Perry in just a minute.
Shorter than I used to be, you know. So now we're going to have our closing song, which is One Voice, not the Barry Manilow version. This is written by Ruth Moody and performed by the U.S. Air Force Band.
This is the sound of one voice.
Thought I'd get shot if I brought the Barry Manilow one. Right now we're going to extinguish the chalice, and Gail is going to do that. I'm tongue-tied today.
We extinguish this flame, but not the light of hope, not the fire of justice, not the spark of democracy that lives within us. The Constitution faces trials in our own time, and its strength depends on our care. As we leave this place, may we carry the flame in our hearts to speak truth against falsehood, to guard the rights of all people, and to act with courage in defense of freedom.
So I just want to close. I wanted to thank everybody for listening today. We know the value of democracy. So I ask you all to continue the fight, answer the call of history, and leave here today with courage, with clarity, and with love, because everything depends on it. We the people are still here. As Frederick Douglass once said, agitate, agitate, agitate. Freedom is worth it. Now, Linda Weaver will provide the announcements, followed by the postlude, which is, do you hear the people sing?